Taxation number 11938, Reel 19.
Mr. G. Eyston, Reel 19. Have you any other memories of the time that you were in Kassassin Transit Camp, Mr. Eyston?
Well, flies. The first time we'd been infested with flies. And when I say infested, I really mean infested. Why, big flies. Not fleas, but big flies. Cattle flies, as we'd call them in England. And I think this was the first time that we used mosquito nets. Individual mosquito nets hung up from the ceiling of the, from the roof of the tent and down over each. I think we had single wooden beds there. Whether we had palliasses or not, I think we had palliasses. Yes, I think it was palliasses. And the mosquito net draped down over the top of us. A big one. In Cyprus we had a little one because we were in bivouacs, and that was just a little one that fit inside the bivouac. But in Kassassin we had big ones coming down from the ceiling of the ceiling from the top of the Indian tent down and over each cot. I should have mentioned that the Indian tent has got what is called a fly sheet, which has nothing to do with flies. It is a sheet over the top of the tent which should allow the air to go through and keep the tent below cool. It's called a fly sheet, but it goes right over the top of the tent, over the roof of the tent, and it allows the air to go through in a thermos flask fashion, so that it keeps the tent reasonably cool inside. Entertainment, I seem to remember cinema, which I think was the first one we'd seen, and there was certainly a very good nappy. And I do remember two, maybe three nights in there where we had quite big parties. I think the brigade must have been around about, because there was more than the 6th Battalion there, I'm sure. And we had some quite entertaining nights in the Nuffy. Two or three anyway, because 3 days or 4 days I didn't venture very far. And then we started doing some route marches and fitness, and there was one hill, no, that wasn't there, that was Suez. We dug a few little slit trenches here and there, mainly for exercise, I think, rather than for any real purpose. And some rifle drill and anything. Light, I'm saying light, it wasn't the intention to be light, it was intended to be as heavy as we could make it, to tighten us up again, because we'd had 9 weeks on the boat and we were definitely flabby.
Now you're in the desert, did you have any lectures there which actually tried to acclimatise you to the, what to expect in the desert?
Yes, I can't recall what they said, but certainly there was lectures going on. And of course, even now we thought we were going up the desert. Although, even from Kassassin, it could have been anywhere. It could have been Palestine, Iraq. I think at that time it was just on the point of Greece, I'm not sure. It could have been anywhere then, even in Kassassin, because it was pretty central. The Suez was central for the whole of the Middle East affair. And it could have been anywhere. Certainly, the desert was the thing that we thought about most. And certainly a lot of the lectures were sort of suggesting that we went to the desert. And it,
had you been warned of any of the natives, particularly the
I don't remember any leave from there, for all it was quite close to Ismailia. I don't remember any leave at all from Kassassin. No, I think it was mainly a matter of toughening up and finding our feet after the 9 weeks on the boat. So the ladies, as far as I'm aware, didn't come into it. Not the local ladies, didn't come into it at that particular time. And it was a bit of a shock when we were put on the train again.
About when was this? What date would this be?
The 19th, we decided to pack, and we were on the we moved to Port Said on the 24th of July 1941, and that was a bit of a shock that we went to Port Said and onto a mine layer, and I think it was HMS Manxman, but I could be wrong about that, but I think it was Manxman. And she was a very, very fast mine layer, and even at that stage, I don't think we knew we went to Cyprus, because we could have, again, gone to any of the islands, Crete, or I'm not quite sure the time of this. I think Crete had been and finished then, hadn't it? But anyway, we could have gone anywhere at this particular time, and why a very fast minesweeper, mine layer, puzzled us a bit. We were mine layer where the mines would normally be stored. After the mines had been removed. The thing about the marksman was the noise, a terrible noise. It whined. And I suppose these were turbines that were really battling it out. I don't know what speed they did. And I don't really know how long it took, because I think it was only a night. We arrived through the night, if I remember rightly, and disembarked very fast. And I suppose the boat came back the next night under darkness again. So, really, there's nothing that we can recall about the... it was frightening in a sense, but it was mainly the noise from the engines, from the turbines, which were more scary than anything else. And yet, we've been in this mine layer, which had no... I suppose she was armour-plated on the side, to protect the mines from any shot that might be fired at them. So there was no view out at all. You couldn't see anything. We just sat with our backs either side, one set with our backs to the where the engines were, and the other side to the backs where the sea was, in this alleyway, as you might say, which ran from front to the back of the boat. And we couldn't see anything. We had no idea what was happening, where we were going, really. And in the morning, we were quite surprised to find ourselves underneath the walls of the castle in Famagusta. Well, I didn't know where it was, I don't think. So even when I got off the boat, I didn't know where I was. We soon found out, of course. We so knew we were Famagusta, because the Navy lads told us. I think there was, just before we got there, a tannoy sort of a thing saying that we'd be arriving in Famagusta, so-and-so, and be prepared to for a quick disembarkation kind of thing. And then everyone was running around, where's Famagusta? So, yes, we did know before we got there. But the dock itself was right underneath the walls of Famagusta Castle. It was really an interesting place, Famagusta.
Was there any kind of welcome from the... natives? Was any population around?
No. There was hardly anybody on the docks there, not like Durban or anything like that, or even Mombasa. We could see people on the shore waving. But Famagusta, there was no sign of anybody on the dock side. And speed seems to be the essence of everything at that stage, because obviously they what he does offering somebody else on, or maybe some more stores on. I don't quite know what they were doing, but speed seemed to be the essence. In fact, there is a story that anything was dropped over the side. A diver, went down, retrieved it for a financial reward. In fact, there seemed to be some suggestion that the Navy and the diver were in cahoots about this, but whether that was true or not, I don't know. Now, how we got to Larnaca, again, is a bit vague, but I think it was by transport, but what transport, I can't imagine. We drove through Famagusta, underneath the castle, sort of leaving the castle, leaving the sea, and then going through Famagusta. And I remember a railway crossing, going across the railway somewhere. But the main memory is of orange groves, which even in July were showing red oranges, ripe oranges, just ready for picking. At least I thought they were. But being on transport, we didn't get a chance to go and find it out. But as we hit the little villages between Famagusta and Larnaca, they were all on the roadside with oranges piled up. They must have got wind were coming, and the oranges parked on the roadside, and you could buy them for very, very little compared to what we used to pay for oranges. You know, for about a penny, you're getting five or six oranges, which was much more, much less than they were in England.
What were your first impressions of Cyprus?
Well, we went round the south coast, and Larnaca's on the south coast. Famagusta's on the east coast, and Larnaca's on the south coast. So we went southeast, and that was a proper green belt all the way down from Famagusta to Larnaca, with lots of villages on. So the villages seemed to be on the landward side, and the sea way to the left to south side. It was very interesting, I thought. We were able to see backwards, you know, looking backwards through the canopy. And it was very interesting. Lots of little villages, maybe four or five mud houses, which was strange. There was a road, quite a good road. But the orange groves and the olives groves, they were the things that really took the eye, I think. And we got to Larnaca and went through Larnaca to almost onto the beach, into an olive grove which is surrounded by eucalyptus bushes. And we slept, we had bivouacs under the olive grove and underneath the eucalyptus bushes. Mine was underneath the eucalyptus. It was very pleasant. It was reasonably cool. Greenish. They were getting a little bit more desertish now than it had been, but it was greenish. And quite close to the sea. I mean, you could almost pop down to the sea and have a swim at any time. But we didn't swim a lot there for some reason. We went into the village of Larnaca and went off the, I suppose it was the quay that the fishing boats used, off a wooden quay. One small problem with fish swimming in Larnaca was that there were some jellyfish around, which just below the surface of the water. And they have a sting on their backs. And you used to catch the lads at the private parts just as they were going over it, and they used to swell up. For a long time, they wondered whether it was Sister Street that had caused the swelling or what it was, until we discovered that it was the jellyfish that were doing it. A lot of people were relieved at that. Because then in Larnaca, the MO really got to work, and he started his... what do they call it? Something like Safety First. I'll probably think of the name. I'll mention it again. Which contained one condom, French letter, some ointment. And when you came back, you were blown up with Condy's fluid. And they put a pipe down and blew the penis up with Condy's fluid and put it in the bladder and hope that everybody would come back clean.
This is when you came back or before you went?
When we came back?
You going this trip?
Yes, I can't think of the name of it now. Before you went, you see, you went in and you saw the orderly, and he supplied you with some ointment and a condom. And then you would go to Sister Street and do what had to be done in Sister Street. When they came back...
Sister Street was the brothel area?
Yes, yes. I've seen Sister Street, it could have been Water Street. Either Ismailia was Sister Street and Water, or the others was, I think it was Water Street in Larnaca. And then when they came back, they went to see the MO again, and he blew you up with Condish fluid, which was quite painful, really. It was, wasn't as bad as the lads going with VD to Netley, because they'd had the umbrella up and pulled out, but, and then filled with Condish fluid. But it wasn't planned. It was hardly worth it. As far as I could see, it wasn't worth the problem. And after I'd seen them, I'm afraid I had the same expressions I had in France, that it wasn't for me. I don't know why, but I just couldn't get away with that situation at all.
Was it an offence to catch VD, actually catch VD?
Yes. And especially if you see, you recorded as having taken the precautions. I can't think of this name. It was a good name. You hadn't taken the precautions. If you hadn't got your stuff before you went, and you hadn't gone back and got blown up when you came back, it was your fault. Now, if you'd been recorded and you'd fulfilled your obligations, then it was an act of God kind of thing. The problem was then that they were trying to prove that you'd been with somebody else after you'd been elsewhere.
And if you caught this disease, was there a punishment involved in it?
I think they went away, but I don't know where they went to. Whether they went to a hospital or not, I don't know.
Do you recall that if it was pretty rife, VD, amongst the troops?
After we left Larnaca, we moved inland to a little village. And we were doing a lot of exercises there, all the way around the island. The village was more or less central to the island. And every day, more or less, we went out through another village. And it was said there that VD was rife, but malaria used to come along and clear it, because the heat from the malaria used to clear it. So the people in the village didn't bother about it at all, because one week they had VD, the next week they had malaria, and it cured itself, but it sounded an horrible situation to me. But they didn't seem to bother about it at all. It was just that the one cured the other, and the VD didn't cure malaria, but malaria cured the VD, because the heat developed during the malaria killed the germs of the VD. That's what I was told. Whether that was true or not, I don't know. But certainly we went through this village quite regularly, because it was really the only way out to some parts of the island.
How did you find the Cypriots?
The Cypriots, being a mixture of Greek and Turk, some villages very friendly, some not quite so friendly. But I got on very well from this village in the middle, Kokini Tremithia. There, I don't know how I got to this place, but I had to try and find somewhere for an officer's laundry. I don't know who the officer was, but from somewhere I had to find somewhere to get his laundry done. And I went touring around the island for a bit, and I came across the Armenians. And they were very glad to do it and asked me to stop and have a meal with them while I was there. And I did, and eventually I started taking some of the boys out to this house, and we'd have a real good meal. The army food was good. One thing that I do remember very well about Cyprus was they developed a method of cooking rabbit cheese. The army stable. The army cooks had really got round to this rabbit, Welsh rabbit now, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And the food was really good. But, you know, when you're in the army, to have a meal out somewhere is quite different. So I took the boys out to these Armenians, and we had some marvellous meals there. Because at this place, Kokini, we were way out, more or less, on the desert. It was a real desert, I suppose, because it was stony and hard-going. Pretty well a real, as the desert was, we found out. Not a sandy desert, but a desert as we found the desert to be, the western desert to be. And we hadn't too much in the way of naffy or anything. There was no naffy anyway. And our only things out was a trip down to Larnaca occasionally and to Nicosia occasionally. So this Armenian place was quite close. And we used to go there and have a good meal. And they were very, very good to us. They couldn't do enough for us. And most of the cafes in Cyprus, if you went in for a meal, they were really, really obliging and well-cooked. And they would cook English stuff if we wanted it, which most of us did in a sense. But also they'd bring some of their own Cypriot foods out to try and tempt us. They were very, very good. Quite close to Kokini was another little village. And they used to make wine. I'd heard they made wine anyway. So I grabbed a 2-gallon water can one night and jumped on a motorbike and went down to this village and got 2 gallons of wine and brought it back. And it was really foul. But it was like beer, you've got to get the taste of it. And once you got the taste of it, it was quite good. In fact, it was pomegranate wine. But the first mouthful was really terrible. I nearly got swamped because lads were waiting for a good drink and I came back with this stuff. But as I said, but as the night wore on and you got happier, as you might say, it went down very well. In fact, I went back nearly most nights after that and filled the water can up with pomegranate wine. There was another one, pomegranate and banana, I think, or something like that. We used to go out and pick this
was
stuff
there
up.
Much contact with the Cypriot young ladies and the troops?
No, I got on very well with this Armenian family, who had 2 daughters, and they took me to a Cypriot wedding. It was unfortunate that I had to go back to camp, but the Cypriot wedding went on 3 days. It started with the young man sort of having his party and the girl having her party, and then the families would get together on the second day, and the third day they'd get wed, and then the fourth day they'd wait for the sheet coming out with the blood on. It was a fantastic state of affairs. I often think they'd probably cut themselves to get some blood on the sheet, but still.
Did you see any example or experiences of anti-British feeling on the island?
Not on Cyprus, no. No, see, Cyprus was a colony, and they realised that most of their work had come from Britain, most of their employment had come from Britain. You know, the copper mines and things like that, they were all British. They had nothing until the Britons went there, like a lot of other countries had nothing until the British went there. And they were quite, I think, quite happy. The big problem was the two, the Greek and the Turk, that you had to watch which way you were going and what you said one to another. In Nicosia, there was a bit of a problem that it was a bit of a divided city, not divided by a war or anything like that, but they divided themselves. The Greeks had gone to one half of it, and the Turks had gone to the other, and in the centre there was quite a British place where they mixed. And they were very good, and there were some very good bars with dance orchestras in and cabarets. And later on, after we'd been in this Kanini some time, they got 2 or 3 days leave and they went over to Kyrenia, which is in the north part of Cyprus. How to get there was horrific. It was just like Sicily, in fact, as for that is, because you went up the hill and very high up, backwards and forwards, horseshoe after horseshoe after horseshoe. And at the horse show, there was nothing. He just dropped down and there was nothing there. And when he got to the top, you looked down, it was more or less sheer, and you wonder how the devil he got to the top. And when he got to the top, he went down the other side with the same performance. He went down in second gear, more or less, to the bottom, to Kyrena. And then at Kyrena, there was a marvellous swimming place. That was really good swimming. Rocks all the way around it. And there was a young lady there, and I think her name was Judy Shirley. And she was a singer she was a good singer. And one of her programs was Monday night at 7, I think, or Monday night, I think it was Monday night at 7, on the radio, on British radio, before the war. I suppose at this time she was about 44, maybe in a 40, 44, I should think about that time. But she was a good singer and a well-known pre-war artist. I don't know how long she'd been in Kyrene, you know, but she'd established quite a big hotel there, and it was quite a good place to go to. And I think the lads that went over there 3 days, and they probably stayed I don't know, there was a camp there that they stayed in, and then they were free to do what they wanted. I never got the chance to stay, but I took quite a lot of them over there. Judy Shirley, I'm nearly certain that was her name.
Did you have sporting activities?
Yes.
Running,
yes. Now, I hadn't got into running again very much since Alice. And I did do a little bit, but I was nothing. I suppose I was giving way to the leg, really. And I didn't do anything really in winning anything. But we did motorcycle cross countries. And again, I was too light to do anything with it, but it was good fun. And we did quite a few of these cross-country things on motorbikes. Now, here we got 2-pound anti-tank guns in the battalion. I mean, before, we only had 2-pound anti-tank guns in brigade, a platoon in brigade had 2-pounders. But in Cyprus, we got 2-pounders as battalion equipment. They were towed by 1,500-weight trucks. And, of course, the anti-tank platoon started there. At Canini, they just arrived. And we were backing them into underneath the trees. And I got over a stone. And one wouldn't turn round. I thought, if I put a stone on the wheel, it'll help it to turn as it's reversing it. And the fourth stone went under, my foot went under as well. I didn't know they were so heavy as that. They're quite heavy on those two wheels. I didn't tell anybody what I'd done either. So I was hopping around quite a bit for a while. And just outside of this little copse we're riding under, there was a donkey on the wheel, bringing the water up and tipping it out. It was quite a good arrangement, really. It's so simple when you saw it. But the donkey just walk around on top of the, round and round all the time with blinkers on, poor thing. And turning like a mill wheel. And it used to bring things up and tip them out at the top. That was just outside. There was a lot of interest in Cyprus. The big mountain there was supposed to be where, although there's this mountain all over the place where the ark landed. Moses and his ark. No, Moses. Anyway, the ark.
Noah
and his ark. It was supposed to land on the big mountain. And of course, for all it is in the Mediterranean, the snow at Paphos. And the boys used to go out into the snow for the thrill of it, I think. But it's a very old town. A very old island, and a lot of interest there. One peculiar part was that, I don't know why it came about, but it could have been fleas or it could have been anything, but the band, a lot of the lads decided to have the hair shaved off, right off. Just got that nicely done, they got an engagement for the band in Nicosia. The only time I remember them playing at their dance with a caps on. Because they'd shaved the lot off and they looked horrible. And nearly all the band was in the same boat, so it must have started in the MT, I suppose. And there they were playing with this dance with the caps on.